Somewhere along the way, many of us came to believe that if you are a follower of Jesus, you're promised a happy and carefree life. When you read the scriptures, you see that to follow Jesus means that you are also called to take up your cross. For most of us, it doesn't take long to figure out that living life in a broken and fallen world means that we encounter suffering and hardship. And for the Christian living in this broken world, the scriptures tell us to be prepared for additional difficulty and persecution because of our faith. What is suffering? What are the benefits of suffering? How are we to navigate a life filled with suffering? And how can we as parents and youth workers rewrite the narrative for kids so that they're prepared to live with suffering? We'll talk about these questions and more with Dave Ripper, co-author of the new book, The Fellowship of the Suffering, How Hardship Shapes Us for Ministry and Mission, on this episode of Youth Culture Matters.
From the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, this is Youth Culture Matters. If you're a parent, youth worker, educator, counselor, grandparent, or anyone else who cares about kids, we're glad you've joined us for this practical, informative, and hope-filled podcast. This is a place where together we talk and think Christianly about the rapidly changing world of today's children, teens, and young adults.
Well, it's another episode of Youth Culture Matters. I'm Walt Mueller here at CPYU in the hot town of Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania. We're hitting, what, 100 today, Chris?
Heat index is supposed to be over 100, I think.
Yeah, it's been brutal. We thank God for air conditioning so we can enjoy this and not have to suffer, not have to suffer with the heat, because we're talking about suffering today. And we're going to jump right into this because I really believe this is a crucial topic. I don't want to waste any time up front having our normal banner, but I want to welcome Dave Ripper, who's joining us from, are you in Lexington right now, Dave? Lexington, Mass?
A neighboring town over, Woburn, Mass.
Woburn, right. Yeah. And now most, spell it, W-O-B-U-R-N, right?
Right, yep.
Yes.
Woburn.
Now, if we, Chris, if I had said to you, if I had put that up, W-O-B-U-R-N, how would you have said that?
Woburn.
Woburn. You would have said Woburn, right?
Sure.
Yeah, so we do a thing up there, Dave, that Duffy Robbins and I teach up at Gordon-Conwell, and we have students come in from around the country, you know, for these residencies. And at the end of our third residency, I have a PowerPoint thing that I put up that's just how well have you acclimated to the North Shore? And because you're from Pittsburgh, so you got to deal with all that stuff, too. You know, when Lisa and I moved up there years ago to Salem, we had to learn how to say all the town names correctly. So I put up about 15 Massachusetts town names, and I'll call on somebody to say, pronounce it. And it's nobody can get it. Our foreign students can't get it. Our American students can't get it. It's just hilarious. So they do learn some of them, and they try. But, yeah, that's a tough thing. But Dave's in Lexington, and Dave, you're at Grace Chapel. Tell us about what you're doing there.
Yeah, at Grace Chapel, I've been there nearly 7 years after finishing up Denver Seminary and then moving out here from Colorado. I serve as our Lexington campus pastor, so we have five locations. That's kind of our hub location, and then I've done our young adult ministry kind of post high school, you know, college age through 30s. I've been doing that the whole time and been in the campus pastor role for about 3.5 years now.
And what's amazing is when Dave and I connected, and I'll tell you why we connected in a minute, but when Dave and I first connected, I found out he was from New Brighton, Pennsylvania. Did you graduate from New Brighton High School then? Or
did, class of 02. Yeah.
Class 02, New Brighton High School, which is just across the river, literally, across the famous Beaver Vale, the Beaver River, from where Chris and I both went to college in different millennia, I guess. Geneva College. And what was funny about that was you're not only from New Brighton, but when I found out you grew up at the New Brighton Christian Assembly Church, where our good friend Ryan Paskey was your youth pastor.
Yeah.
The level of trust in you diminished quickly when I knew that Paskey had poured his life into you. But no, we love Ryan. Ryan and Susan are great friends of ours, and so that was really neat. But you're up there at Grace Chapel now, and
yeah.
I have to give a shout-out to some other friends that are up there. So Ruthie Siders,
Hello.
Ruthie, who is – what's her title there exactly with Next Gen?
Yeah, pastor of Next Generation Ministries.
Yes, yeah. She was one of our grads from Gordon-Conwell, and I actually went through to do my master's work with her. And then Mark Canister is one of your elders, correct? Is Mark, do you know Mark, who teaches youth ministry?
Absolutely. And I know Adonis, too.
Yeah.
Another one of ours, yeah.
Yeah, Adonis Vidu, who teaches with Duffy and I, is an elder there. So we have a lot of ties to Grace Chapel. I've been there a few times, and great place. But the reason we have Dave on right now is because I had requested a book, a brand new book from InterVarsity Press, and the book is titled The Fellowship of the Suffering, How Hardship Shapes Us for Ministry and Mission. And Dave is the co-author of that, along with Paul Borthwick, who we tried to have on today. Paul was originally scheduled to be with us, but Paul had another commitment he had to get to. So we're happy to have Dave, but this book, and we're going to talk about it. To me, I was drawn to this book not just because these guys wrote it, but because I truly believe that suffering and a good theology of suffering is really absent in the American church, and it is central to what it means to be a follower of Jesus Christ. And I've learned in my own life through the limited suffering that I've had, and I do appreciate one of the things you guys both said in here a couple of times, and that is that when you experience suffering, everything about you focuses in on that. Your suffering at that moment in time is the worst in the world, really, right? Is that kind of the way you said it? Or?
Yeah, that's how Paul kind of described it. What's the worst suffering in the world? That it's yours. It's what you personally experience. That's how he especially defines and looks at the extent of suffering and how it impacts us. Yeah.
Yeah, so it gives permission for us to suffer in the way that God gives us suffering, and we'll talk about this. Suffering is a gift from God. It works God's purposes out in our lives, and I just think that youth workers and parents need to read this, because most parents try to protect their kids from suffering, but suffering is a crucible that is so valuable. So we're going to talk through that, and the book's published by InterVarsity Press. And the first question I have for you, Dave, in talking about this is, how did you and Paul come together to write this book? Because you guys are markedly different generationally. I think Paul's older, a few years older than me. He's been in youth ministry, you know, an icon in youth ministry for years. How old are you?
Yeah. I'm 34, so 34, Paul's about 30 years older than me.
Yeah, so tell the story in the book, but how did you guys connect?
Yeah, we first, Paul's been a part of our church for a long time, served on staff there 22 years, and now he does a lot of work all over the world with the Development Associates International, essentially teaching a master's in organizational leadership program in parts of the world that don't have access to higher Christian education. And Paul and I were at the Urbana 2012 Youth Student Missions Conference in St. Louis, and we'd known each other a little bit out of our church, but while we were going up the escalator into this big arena, Paul, out of nowhere, kind of asked me, "What causes you to suffer?" And it was a very pointed question, caught me off guard a little bit, and I asked him, "Well, what made you ask that right now?" And I had given a sermon at our church that wasn't even related to suffering, probably the previous Sunday that he had heard, and he just mentioned, you know, "I could tell by the way that you spoke that you have gone through pain and you've gone through suffering, and I have too, and so I'd be curious to hear about yours." And so I shared some of the things with, you know, family struggles, but predominantly the major area and way that I've suffered in my life is through my wife's suffering. She has a degenerative eye condition called retinitis pigmentosa, and she's had that her whole life, and essentially she really just has vision straight ahead. She can't see downward, can't see peripherally very well, can't see at night. And that's just been a really tough thing to watch this person that I've dedicated my life to and love so deeply to go through that. So that was one of the bigger areas of that. And I think from realizing we had a lot of we both suffered, it forged a real solidarity, a real fellowship with Paul and I. And so we just became friends, you know, over the years and talked a lot. And then this book really came about the first idea of it was late November 2015. Paul had walked with me through, like, my family and I, we wanted to start our family via adoption. And so we had a failed adoption with a local child here in Boston in 2014. And we tried to adopt internationally the next year, a sibling group. And both of those situations were really, really tragic. We're just the deepest parts of the brokenness of our world made those situations impossible, essentially going from where these kids were to trying to go to a family situation was too big of a leap from where they were to this. And so that was really heartbreaking. And Paul walked with me through that really well. He was actually on the same continent that we were during this international adoption and said some very prophetic words to me. I had thought about actually resigning from Grace Chapel after the second failed adoption because I just didn't want to put our congregation through all of the pain again that they had walked with us through. And then Paul made this very prophetic comment that he said, I think your failure will probably speak more powerfully to this church than if you were to be successful. And I think that has proven to be true. So fast forward a little bit. I had taken some time away from preaching and speaking, and then as I started to get back into it, I preached a sermon called Suffering Comes with the Territory, and it's all about how suffering comes with the territory of serving Christ. Kind of as you mentioned, Walt, you know, it's such an overlooked topic in, like, the American church, especially, like, the American, you know, mega church. Our church is about 4,000 people each week, and that's just not something we talk about that often, although many people experience a lot of hardship. And after that sermon, Paul, he found me in the lobby of our church and just said, you know, you need to write this in a book. This is your book. You just told me so much of my life's story through this message. And, you know, I thought it was very kind of Paul. He'd written 16 other books at this point, and I just kind of shrugged it off, but he took me out to breakfast and just shared with me all the ways that my premise, which in that sermon was the kingdom of God advances greatly through suffering. And he just told me story after story, historically, globally, about how this has proven to be true. And after hearing Paul talk about it, I thought there probably is something here, but, you know, I'm like 32 years old at the time. I mean, what does a guy like me really know about suffering? What authority do I really have to speak on the subject? But as I prayed about it, I felt the Lord sensing me or putting on my heart to ask Paul to write it with me. And if he was up for that, then perhaps we actually pursue this project. And Paul gladly accepted that opportunity. And we were off and running. InterVarsity Press was kind enough to take on this project. And here it is now today.
Yeah. All right. So just as a side, issue here, you know, something you brought up. I think the beauty of the mentoring relationship between you and Paul and Paul's willingness to step in and pour into your life. You know, for those who are listening, just hear that, because you never know how, as an older person, you know, your own experiences and your own wisdom, your own ability to ask the right questions at the right time can really spark something and encourage somebody. And then on the other side, Dave, I think what's really neat about you is just your teachable spirit, your willingness to listen to an older, you know, brother in the body of Christ who has come to you and spoken into your life. And I want to ask you about part of that, something you mentioned there with Paul, that he opened your eyes maybe to some things you weren't aware of in terms of not only church history, but missions as well. In his own experience, I know he's traveled the globe and he's seen incredibly deep suffering firsthand and walked through some difficult things. He describes some of that in the book. How does having that perspective, the wide perspective, and then the wide perspective of the now, you know, the global perspective on suffering, and then the deep perspective or the long perspective, perhaps, on church history, how has that helped you? And then a second follow-up question to that would be, you know, I'm thinking about parents and youth workers who are listening. How important is it for us to expand the global vision of kids and then that long vision back through history as well, you know, the length and the width? Does that make sense, that question? That was pretty loaded.
Yeah, I could spend like a long time talking about that, so stop me somewhere along the line. But so how has this helped me, essentially, like Paul's perspective? That's what you're asking,
yeah,
right?
Just yeah, sure. And church history and then globally.
Yeah. One of the parts of the book that Paul includes is stories related to Adoniram Judson. And following his life. I believe it's one of his family members we include in the book that says, you know, success and suffering go hand in hand. If you are successful, but you're not suffering, it is because someone else has suffered before you. And if you are suffering and yet not experiencing the successes, you know, in ministry, the fruitfulness that you would hope for, it is because someone after you is going to be able to reap, I think, the benefits of that. So success and suffering really go hand in hand. And I think if we just take a great look back at the history of Christian mission, you just see how much of the church has been built around death through persecution and through hardships of all sorts and kinds. And then just even in our world today, I think we see this proving to be true as well. One of the stories we share in the book was about a visit that my wife and I made to Eugene Peterson and his wife, Jan, up in their place in Lakeside, Montana on Flathead Lake. Beautiful spot. And Eugene is, and for those who might not know him, he translated the version of the Bible called The Message, written some incredible books for pastors. I couldn't recommend him enough for youth workers. And so we're having just a great day with them. And my wife, she's a licensed mental health therapist, and so pastor's wife. And while we're having lunch, and oddly enough, the Petersons actually took us out to a microbrewery, and Peterson had a, you know, ordered an IPA, and I thought, I've definitely got to get a beer. This might be the closest I ever come to having a beer with the author of the Bible, this side of heaven, at least. But while we're enjoying this great lunch.
All right. I just want to interrupt you there and let listeners know, don't get hung up on what he just said, because he's orthodox in his theology. All right. Don't go ahead, Dave. That was a funny line, though, but go ahead.
So we're having a great lunch, and my wife leans across the table and asks the Petersons. She just said, you know, I've gone to seminary. I'm a pastor's wife. I do all this counseling with people going through a ton of trauma, a ton of difficulty. And as prepared as I was for this, I had no idea just how hard ministry was really going to be, how isolating, how lonely. I don't feel like anybody really knows what I carry around each and every day. And Eugene very compassionately just said, you know, suffering comes with the territory. Loneliness comes with the territory of ministry. And it was probably the best news that we had ever heard within the months leading up to that, because we felt like we were doing something wrong because we felt lonely, because we felt isolated. Even though we're surrounded by a lot of people, we felt like something was off. And to hear someone who has had as much fruitfulness in ministry and success as Peterson, who's so widely, you know, appreciated, to say that this is par for the course, was just very validating, that we felt confirmed that what we're going through is actually what people throughout history have gone through, and this is the way that God's kingdom grows and advances. So we were in really good company. It was really a great fellowship sort of moment that we experienced with them through the knowledge that they have gone through some really hard times as well. So I think suffering and success go together, and that's been true historically. And we see that to be true even of the people that have the most outward ministry success. That's part of the story that often isn't seen or known or told.
That's good. Hey, we're going to take a break. We're talking to Dave Ripper, and Dave has co-authored a book with our friend Paul Borthwick. It's published by InterVarsity Press. It just came out. When did it actually come out, Dave? Was it March?
This came out May 15th.
Oh, May 15th. Okay, so the book's called The Fellowship of the Suffering, How Hardship Shapes Us for Ministry and Mission. And don't think from the title that this is just for people who work, you know, vocationally, full-time, in ministry or mission. I really think this is a book for everybody. And, you know, one of the things I did, Dave, as I was reading this, I was asking the Lord to bring to mind people I know who would benefit from reading this. And so I was, you know, interrupting my reading by, when someone would come to mind, I'd send a Facebook message to them and, you know, a link to the book, or I'd send them an email or a text, hey, you need to read this. And I really want to recommend it for numerous reasons, because I think personally, if you're in ministry or if you're a parent or just a normal human being who's endeavoring to follow Jesus Christ in this world, you need to read this. I think it's good. And And I think, too, we need to read it because we need to teach it. We need to teach what's in here. So we're going to come back and continue our conversation with Dave. Stick with us. Here at the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, we want to help you stay up to date on today's youth culture. One of the tools we've developed to keep you current is our weekly Youth Culture E-Update. Delivered to you by email, our Youth Culture E-Update comes to you in a format that allows you to easily scroll through and quickly choose those stories and resources that will be most helpful to you in your particular setting. To sign up for this free resource, go to our website at cpyu.org, scroll down to the bottom of the page, and enter your email address in the tab marked E-Update Sign Up. It's that simple. Welcome back. We're chatting with Dave Ripper, who serves as a Lexington campus pastor at Grace Chapel in Lexington, Massachusetts, and also is the pastor of Young Adult Ministries at Grace Chapel. I did notice from your bio, Dave, I got to bring this up. Your two favorite movies. This was on the church website, right? Do you remember what you wrote there?
I think Braveheart and Dumb and Dumber.
That's correct.
Yes.
And if you had just said, look at my bio and tell me from my bio who you think my youth pastor was when I was in high school, those two movies would have given it away. It would have been Ryan Paskey. So, you know, he just...
Great connection.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when you stand in his house and you chat with him, that's where you kind of get the Dumb and Dumber. And then you see and I'm not throwing him under the bus. I love this guy. He's one of the funniest guys I know. And then when you're chatting with him and he's standing in front of his sword from the Marine Corps.
That's right.
You know, the thing that's on the wall, that's where the Braveheart is. So it's kind of this nexus of those two things, which is great. So,
well, came out the same year too, which is really pretty remarkable. I was in fifth grade when both those movies came out, and it was a heck of a year. So anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Oh, that's great. Well, you learn a lot about people from the things they watch. I love that. That's great. I'll just mention this. You know, this is a funny story. So my oldest son, who's Josh, would be I think 32 now. He graduated from high school in 2004, and so with our local high school. You know, they put their picture in, the activities. I don't know if they mentioned what they're going to do after high school, but they put in, like, a favorite quote, you know, like a life-defining quote. And so the yearbook comes, and I start to flip through, and I see these kids who, you know, have Bible verses, and I'm going, man, that is awesome. I flip to his page real quick to see what Bible verse he puts up, and it's a quote from Dumb and Dumber, from the film. Something about the bird, you know, the bird. What was it? The funny. I can't remember what it was, but I just thought.
I thought. Yeah, it was just quiet. I thought something like that.
Yeah, it made me so proud. So Dave's written this book called "The Fellowship of the Suffering: How Hardship Shapes Us for Ministry and Mission," along with Paul Borthwick. And one of the things Dave said before the break, I want to come back to that, Dave, because you talked about the question your wife, Erin, asked Eugene Peterson when you folks got to spend a day with him. What was the question again? The question was?
She essentially asked, I'd never expected ministry and life to really be as hard as what it is. And it was not so much a question, more of just a lament.
Okay,
on it. And then Peterson responded by saying, suffering comes with the territory of ministry. Loneliness comes with the territory.
So, you know, you've done youth ministry. You've been in ministry for a while. And I told you during the break that I track with a lot of the forums on Facebook. And we hear youth workers saying a lot of the same things that Erin said, because ministry is hard. It's difficult. But then I see responses. And rather than seeing, you know, encouragement like hang in there or this is right where God wants you, God's refining you, more often than not, at least in my perception, I hear people going, you know, dude, get out of there. Find another church. It's time to move on. How would you speak to that now as opposed to maybe when you first got in ministry? How is your perspective on suffering in terms of vocational ministry and difficulties in vocational ministry? How has that changed over the years for you?
Yeah, I think we live in such a world of like over choice and kind of like self-knowing that we almost feel like we need to be in our sweet spot. Like we need to feel like we are hitting home runs constantly, like our soul and our role needs to be fully aligned. And if there's any sort of incongruence there, then we think something must be wrong and we need to make a better choice. Like somehow this decision for where we are is probably wrong. So it's kind of the whole grass is greener sort of, you know, illusion. And it's a deception, because I think what Peterson really validated is that just ministry, no matter what kind of context it's in, whether your ministry is, you know, 9 to 5 on the job, whether your ministry is as a parent, if your ministry is, you know, in youth work, like you're talking about, we just think that there's probably some better situation than what we are in. And I think the work just is inherently very difficult. I mean, we were trying to push back the darkness. And oftentimes I think we believe that we thought the ministry is going to be harder, like out there, like going against trying to, like, you know, work with the schools or trying to do work in the families. And that's what's making it so hard. And that often is hard. But oftentimes in ministry, it's like the system in which we're working, like our very church, our very structure is what's hardest. And so I think what Peterson helped us see is like we don't need to run to another situation. We don't need to look for an escape hatch. It's probably worthwhile, at least for a season, to really try and stay there. That this is inherent to what ministry is all about. And if you stay with it long enough, oftentimes you will start to see those breakthroughs. You start to become more spirit dependent and reliant in the work that you're in. So I think there's definitely merit to folks who are going through hard situations in their ministry context, and perhaps it might be a time for them to pray about and discern if change, you know, is in the works. But I think we shouldn't look to that escape hatch, you know, so quickly. I think there is an inherent struggle that comes with ministry. And I think Paul talks about it often, like in Colossians 1:28-29, he says, him we proclaim, Christ we proclaim, training everyone, teaching everyone so that that they might be fully mature in Christ. And he says, I do this, you know, toil and struggle. So Paul just helps us see that any ministry is going to have thistles and thorns. It's going to be full of toil. It's going to be hard. So I would just say to a youth person or a worker out there, if you're going through this, you very well might be in the situation that God does, in fact, want you in. So maybe lean in and pray more steadfastly and earnestly, as opposed to just trying to get on, you know, a church staffing or youth specialties job boards to look for somewhere else to go.
That's good. So in your case, you know, you and Aaron, and you mentioned this, you talk about this in the book, your particular type of suffering you've endured has been health related, with Aaron's issues with her eyesight. And by the way, if I'm not mistaken, that's actually, you said she's had that since birth, or?
I mean, she was diagnosed when she was 13, but wow. Looking back, I think there were signs that she probably only struggled with a little bit of vision impairment. People thought she was probably a little ditzy or clumsy, but it probably had to do with the fact she wasn't seeing what everybody else saw.
Yeah, and my understanding is, just from having a friend walk through this is a progressive disease as well. It doesn't just happen and then this is what you live with the rest of your life. This progresses.
Yeah, it's degenerative, and you know, there are some people that have this that can almost go fully blind within, you know, 4 or 5 years, and then, you know, fortunately in our situation, it has it's been a slow digression. But you know, one of the things I think Erin tells in this book, she includes her story about this there, and I was grateful for her generosity and courage to do that. But one of the things that's caused us to do this sort of area of suffering is like live by this principle, and it's live today the way someday you will wish you had lived. Live today the way someday you will wish you had lived. And unless there are huge medical breakthroughs or God heals her miraculously, there probably will be a day where she doesn't have workable vision. And on that day, we want to be able to look back and say, we want to look back and be able to think we lived in the most full way and the most faithful way as we could, given the limitations we had during those seasons. And honestly, those boundaries, because she can't do everything, has brought about a lot of creativity, a lot of freedom for how we have tried to live. And we've taken risks during these times, during these years when she has had vision, knowing in the future we might not be able to be afforded that opportunity. So there is, like Paul Tournier, he has a book on suffering and creativity. And often we look at like our suffering as what limits us, but some of those boundaries can actually just create more breakthroughs for creative thinking and can free us for way more opportunities to serve, to minister, to live well, to live fully. So that's the approach that Erin, I think, has wisely chosen to take. And I've been honored to walk with her through it.
Yeah. And then besides the physical suffering, you guys have had the emotional trauma related to a couple of adoptions that the process did not work out and the disappointment with that. And we hear that story a lot. And then Paul's situation is he's witnessed firsthand a lot of suffering in his work in missions, but also personally, among other things, you know, his battle for a good portion of his adult, well, his whole adult life, right, with type 1 diabetes and just the adjustments that need to have to happen with that. And so there's that. But what I want to draw into this beyond that is I think most of us in the American church, those are the kinds of sufferings we've had, but we haven't really shared in what our brothers and sisters globally have had to deal with in terms of persecution and heartache related to the pushback against being people of faith, which is actually, when you read the scriptures, Jesus promised that. And for some reason, we've been spared from that, you know, in modern day America. But I don't, you kind of hate saying this because it's like saying, come on, Lord, bring it on. But and nobody wants to invite suffering in. But as I read your book and I think about my own life, yeah, those are the times when you grow the most. What I think in some ways, like you talked about Paul's voice being prophetic in your life. I think this book is prophetic in the sense that, you know, from where I sit and being almost 62 years old now, watching the flow of church history and North American church history in my limited scope of just a few years, there has been a move towards the fact that, yes, we may share in this, like our brothers and sisters globally very soon. Talk about that aspect of suffering, you know, the persecution aspect, both scripturally and then practically, because I know you addressed this in the book, you and Paul did.
Yes. You know, just to back up just a moment before getting to that, like when we, just to make sure we're on the same page, like suffering, as we define it in the book, we use Elizabeth Elliot's definition. Her husband was, killed in Ecuador, End of the Spear, if you've seen that movie or heard that story of Jim Elliot. And so she has a lot of credibility, I think, for defining suffering. And she says suffering is having what you don't want or wanting what you don't have. Having what you don't want or wanting what you don't have. And a lot of those things that we have that we don't want are brought about just by our own sinfulness. And then we reap what we sow. So there is an aspect of self-inflicted suffering. There's an aspect of suffering that's just universal. We all die. There are diseases. We live in a broken world. So there's an aspect of suffering that's like that. There's suffering that results from relational turmoil or abuse or some form of trauma that has occurred to us. Outside of our will or against our will. You know, there are horrible, tragic, sort of horrendous parts of suffering, like school shootings or things along those lines. And then there's really suffering that is a result of our faith. And I can think most people I know have in some way suffered because of their faith, at least within their family sort of sphere. You know, relationships have maybe broken down because of faith. I know probably before I was a Christian, some of my extended family members I was closer to, and I became a little too radical for them. You know, some of the positions we've taken has caused some ostracism from members of our family. And so I do think increasingly, even here in North America, I think you're right. I think we are going to experience more suffering in this kind of post-Christian world. And I think the way of Jesus, it's very counter to what is happening progressively in our American culture, where there's just this big polarization, you know, politically between the alt-left and really this more recent rise of this extreme alt-right. And, you know, as a pastor, I feel like often I have a target on my back. I'll give you just one brief example. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I prayed for just the children who have been separated at the border from their parents and their families. And you know, you hear the horrible story of an infant getting taken away while it was being nursed by its mother, and it just absolutely breaks your heart and infuriates you and makes you cry out for justice. And so I prayed for those children, and I received two just scathing notes from people about how inappropriate that was for me to pray, you know, for that situation and, you know, in a church context. And that's coming from like kind of the more evangelical sort of politically evangelical position, which seems to be breaking down, but is also going down, you know, fighting in a lot of ways. So I took some heat on that. And then yesterday I prayed, and I didn't actually pray for those folks yesterday, and, you know, received a message for how inappropriate it was that I didn't pray, you know, for them that day. So all that to say, as an example, I think this way of Jesus is a very third way from like what our culture, how it's developing today. And I do think we're going to experience more and more persecution, more suffering, more misunderstanding than we have before. But I don't think that's something we need to fear. Dallas Willard, who's probably the most influential thinker on my life, he says that the church is always at its best when it's had the least. The church is at its best when it's had the least. And, you know, as Paul, if he were here, he would tell you the country in the world where Christianity is growing at the most exponential rate is Iran. So we're seeing huge moves of the Spirit growing in these highly persecuted areas. We've seen this enormous growth in the church, unprecedented growth in many ways throughout China over the last 30 years or so. You know, we see the church in the global south just really booming. So in some ways, I'm encouraged for what this could mean for the North American church, that if we experience persecution, that it actually might be a catalyst for more and more growth. But it's a very difficult thing. And I've not experienced any of that kind of persecution personally. Paul could probably speak to this a little bit more than I could. But what's interesting in those parts of the world, there's such a greater bond of more collective, since these people live in more collective cultures than what we have. And I recently heard Andy Crouch share about how in about a year's time, he had six or seven friends from different countries come here to the United States. And he asked them, you know, what's the first thing you observe about this country? And each person said they observe how lonely and isolated everybody is compared to where they're coming from. And so there's a richness that folks in other parts of the world, I think, experience in community life that perhaps can help them go through these areas of persecution, these types of suffering that maybe we're ill-equipped for here in America. Mm.
I love this. This is really good. Just to mention a couple of things, because, you know, the fact that you wrote this with Paul Borthwick, and you alluded to this, Paul's history in the missions movement and just his wealth. I mean, the breadth of his knowledge and the stories he's heard and the conversations he's had. It's just so rich. And you mentioned Elizabeth Elliot. What most folks might not know listening is that Paul actually has had the opportunity to have a relationship with her where there's been some give and take. You know, she lived on the North Shore there. And I remember when I was at Gordon Conwell, she would come over. She lived right up the street there in Hamilton. And then I think when she passed away here a couple of years ago, she was living in Rockport, if I'm not mistaken. But Elizabeth Elliot, if you don't know her story, Dave mentioned the movie, what is it, End of the Spear?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, so End of the Spear tells the story. And then for years, there's been a very popular missions book out there called Through Gates of Splendor. And what I did not realize, when you read her story, it's unbelievable. Jim Elliot, I mean, just the willingness to do whatever it costs to live the faith and to enter into the sufferings of Christ. What I didn't realize till I read your book was that she talked about suffering as being the gateway to joy. Is that how she described it? And, you know, it's like the doorway into joy. And then I remembered that her radio show that she did Bible teaching was actually called Gateway to Joy, right? And I never knew where that came from. I hope I'm getting that right, but that's that kind of lit up. I see you flipping through the book there. So, I mean, it's just, and she's someone we need to listen to. You mentioned earlier Adoniram Judson. What most folks don't know is he and his wife were the first foreign missionaries to set sail from the United States in the early 1800s to Burma, I believe, if I remember the story correctly, out of Salem, Massachusetts. And Lisa and I lived in Salem when we were up there, and just a couple of blocks from the wharf from which they went. I would think about that all the time. And the great, we romanticize those stories, but the reality of that and the unknown of the future with that is just unbelievable. And so that's a story as well. I know Paul and you, Dave, would encourage folks to read those missionary biographies, but those are stories we need to share with students, because not just knowing the scriptures and God's call to suffering and then God's faithfulness in suffering, but stories of those who have lived that out can prepare us, I think, in some big ways. We need to take a break. When we come back, that's what I want to shift to, is some specific questions about the scriptures and what you've learned from the scriptures about suffering and some of the realities that we need to teach our kids. So stick with us. We'll be right back as we talk to Dave Ripper about his new book, along with Paul Borthwick, called The Fellowship of the Suffering, How Hardship Shapes Us for Ministry and Mission. Be right back. Are you interested in bringing CPYU to your church, school, or community? A big part of our ministry is the on-site seminars we conduct in dozens of settings every year. CPYU seminars are designed to encourage and educate your audience on a variety of youth culture issues. Every seminar is designed to be informative, practical, and hope-filled. If you want to learn more about our CPYU seminars, available speakers, and the many seminar topics and options in our growing seminar lineup, go to our CPYU homepage at cpyu.org. Click on the seminar option on the menu bar at the top of the page, and you can learn more about how to schedule a CPYU speaker and seminar for your parents, youth workers, and educators. So we're back with Dave Ripper talking about a topic that I think is one of the most necessary topics we need to talk about in the church, in the home, and in youth ministry, and that is suffering, and the suffering that comes with being a follower of Jesus. And we're going to talk a little bit here with Dave Ripper, who's the author of this book, The Fellowship of the Suffering. We're going to ask him a little bit about, you know, what is the fellowship of the suffering. But before we do that, I want to throw in one question, and here it is. I mean, this is, I sent this to you ahead of time. Does God promise to make us happy? Because somehow we all grew up believing that, right? And I think sometimes even in our evangelism, we tell, hey, come to Jesus. You know, people come, I need help. I've got problems. Something's not going right in my life. Come to Jesus and everything will be great. Talk about that.
Yeah, God doesn't promise to make us happy. But it's interesting. He does address happiness. Like you think about Psalm 1, it begins, you know, blessed or happy are those who ultimately delight in the law of God. So we do see that joy and happiness are things that God desires, you know, for us, but he doesn't promise that they're going to come without the absence of hardship or pain. I mean, Jesus says, you will have trouble in this world, but take heart, I've overcome the world. You know, if anyone wants to come after me, Jesus says, you know, they must deny themselves, take up their cross and follow me. So, James is very explicit, rejoice when you face trials and suffering of many kinds. So these things are what should be expected. And I think the fact that we don't actually expect hard things to come into our lives, when they do, they rock our world and our faith so much more dramatically. So we need to be teaching people that not only is there suffering that should be expected just because we're human beings and being alive in this broken, fallen world, we're going to experience that. But as Christians, we're going to experience, I think, some added suffering that perhaps we might have been able to avoid had we not been following Jesus. So what I love, though, is that joy is one of the outcomes that is not antithetical to our pain and our suffering. Like Dallas Willard says, joy is a pervasive sense of well-being. In other words, even if everything isn't okay in my life, I can still be well off because Christ is with me. And one of the great realities of God's redemptive work is that joy can actually be heightened because of our sufferings. Like when we go through really hard times and somehow we come out on the other side and we realize, you know, I might be crushed, but I'm not abandoned. I might be persecuted, but I'm not forsaken. We start to see that, oh, God has with me through this all, and through these weak, tough wilderness types of moments, I made it through because he was with me. And there's just a joy that I think comes as a result of our hardship. And I think it's one of the great ways that Jesus really works is that he really turns evil against itself. You know, what God or what Satan or the devil intended for evil, what people intended for evil, God really can work together for good. That can bring great joy for us. But it doesn't mean that everything's going to just turn out all right. There's going to be some hard times that are going to be expected. So I think that sort of approach and expectation for suffering can help us when we go through it in a big way.
Yeah, you know, just as a follow-up to that, as you were talking, I was thinking about one of the issues in our culture right now, a huge issue in parenting, and I think about Leonard Sachs, a pediatrician outside of Philadelphia, who's written a book called The Collapse of Parenting, where he's been highly critical, and rightly so, of, you know, helicopter parenting, raising snowflake kids, you know, all this stuff that results in trigger warnings and the inability to handle difficult times, overparenting, all these different things. You know, when we there's a part of this that you're saying that I'm hearing and I'm going, yeah, I got to tell parents. When I talk to parents, this is another reason why we tell them, stop running interference for your kids. Stop, you know, stepping in and trying to buffer them from the consequences of their actions, because while you think you're doing them a favor and you're protecting them, and I know there's all kinds of things that drive that. This is a deep conversation and a pretty complex issue. But basically, spiritually speaking, it's counterproductive, because you are not forming your kids spiritually. You're contributing to their spiritual malformation if you don't let them suffer the consequences.
That's
of
right.
Their actions. Yeah. Oh, this yeah. is good. Yeah. Yeah. See,
so much of our character is forged out of this. So we want that really form children of character, kids, so that they can be, you know, mature in Christ. And that's really the ultimate thing. We as parents, you know, I have two really young boys, and my hope is not so much for their success, but I hope that they'll be people of character. And character really can't evolve in the greatest ways possible, you know, apart from hardship and suffering.
I want to ask you, we got to get to the fellowship of the suffering, but I want to ask you one more question that was prompted by this. So we were up at Gordon Conwell beginning of June for 2 weeks. I was up there with Duffy Robbins and Adonis, who you know. And I'll bet 6 or 7 times Adonis mentioned to me, you know, you got to check out Jordan Peterson. Do you know that name, Jordan Peterson? Have you heard his name?
I have.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Tell me a little bit more, though.
Well, yeah, I'm just going to mention him, and I actually wish you had been familiar with him, because we could banter a little bit about him. But he's not a believer, but he is. He teaches at the University of Toronto. Used to teach at Harvard, and he has like become this YouTube hit. He's brilliant, a brilliant thinker, a brilliant reader. He's an encyclopedic, you know, just a vault of knowledge, and he's constantly spilling this out. But he's written a book that's on the bestseller list right now called 12 Rules for Life.
Yes,
and he's got a huge following among young men. And because something he's saying is resonating with them, and he's talking about the realities of suffering. He got into this because as a young man, he was really curious growing up in the Cold War. And then the two superpowers fighting with each other, and why would we do this, and what's behind it? And he studied the Holocaust and has read widely on that. And he walks around and two things he's saying that I hear him say. One, do you know how miraculous it is that we actually have times where we get along? That's kind of his secular way of saying, boy, God has really blessed us, common grace, you know, keeping us out of trouble with each other. But the other thing is, life is hard. You will suffer. I mean, he is blunt about saying this, and that's the message is out there. I think people are realizing this finally, and this is what I love about your book. So talk about entering into the fellowship of the suffering, and then check out Jordan Peterson when we're done here.
Absolutely. Yeah, but one of my hopes, I mean, and our hopes with this book is that the fellowship of the suffering would really be a metaphor for the church. I mean, my dream would be that Christians would be so well known for their capability of enduring hard times that when people who were not believers went through hard times, they would actually think, I need to find a Christian to walk with me through this, because Christians are those who know how to suffer well. And for every reason, we should be those people. The Fellowship of the Suffering really combines these two ideas that we don't always pair together, suffering and fellowship. The title for the book kind of came out of two things. One, a little bit of a riff off of Lord of the Rings, the first book, The Fellowship of the Ring, the Fellowship of the Suffering. But that really came out of Philippians 3:10, where Paul writes, I want to know Christ and the power of his resurrection and the sharing of his sufferings, or the fellowship of his sufferings, by becoming like him in his death, if somehow I may attain the resurrection from the dead. And Paul isn't asking to know three things: Christ, the power of the resurrection, and the fellowship of the sufferings. He's really wanting to know Jesus personally in two distinct ways. Yes, through the power of the resurrection, which we talk about, but the other side of this other way that we could really know Christ is through our hardships, through our pain, through our suffering. He is the suffering servant, as Isaiah 53 says. He's suffered like us, he suffers with us, and he's ultimately suffered for us. And so because we can have this kind of fellowship with Christ, we should be those who are empowered to be able to pray through our suffering, to experience joy through our suffering, to have our character really shaped and transformed through our hardship as we invite Jesus into it. When we don't avoid our suffering, as most people are tend to do, or obsess over it, which can be the opposite sort of extreme, the other error. But when we really engage it, which is inviting Christ into our suffering, talking with him, having an awareness and understanding of what we're going through, and then sharing that with other people. So that's kind of the first aspect of the fellowship of the suffering. It's fellowship with Christ. And then secondly, it's really fellowship with others. And I think this is a big growth area for the church, where so often we just love to share stories and testimonies of our successes and what God has done that's so amazing. But I find that when we get honest about, hey, name what causes you to suffer, and people start to share that, just the kind of solidarity that can happen and be forged is really remarkable. I love to pray with a cancer support group that we have at our church, and just to see these people gather together and talk about what they've experienced. I mean, it just feels like church at its richest. And I love those small gatherings. So when we can become more vulnerable and available to one another in our hardships, I think we can create the real context where the church really could be a fellowship of the suffering. So that's kind of the second aspect of this. And then lastly is fellowship with the world. And what we mean by that is the suffering that exists that's caused by evil. We believe that suffering is best overcome through the kind of suffering that's inspired by cross-like love. Bonhoeffer says suffering is overcome by suffering. And that's kind of how we kind of riff off of that the suffering that's caused by evil and the brokenness in our world, the way that we can overcome that is by actually being those who step into the world suffering, knowing that we are people who suffer and we have been healed and we have a Savior who is with us. As we step into that brokenness of the world, whether that's a systemic injustice or just a very broken individual, we believe that's how we can help overcome the suffering in our world. And Paul talks about this powerfully. I'll reference one verse, Colossians 1:24. It's kind of a perplexing New Testament passage where he says, I fill up what is lacking in Christ's afflictions. And most of us think, well, that sounds heretical because Christ's sacrificial death on the cross is sufficient. But I think what Paul is saying here is that while Christ's sacrificial death and suffering is sufficient to pay for our sins, to make us right with God, they're still incomplete in the sense that the knowledge of those sufferings is not as widespread as it could and should be. So when Paul suffers for the gospel, he is actually suffering in a missionary sense, that more and more people can hear about the suffering of Jesus and his resurrection through Paul's very suffering. So our hope in this book is that we would meet people at their moment of pain, take them through this journey of experiencing fellowship with Christ, fellowship with others, and then inspire them to be the kind of people who can step into the world's brokenness and hurt, knowing that they're going to be broken, they're going to get hurt because of this, yet God is with them, and he will help them make it through, no matter what that is. Ultimately, he's going to help them make it through. So that's kind of the journey we hope to walk people through. And, you know, in our day and age, everyone wants to live out their passions, and as we really understand you know, Christ's passion. Well, passion is about a love that's so intense that it's willing to suffer. And so as pastors, leaders, youth workers, we want to help inspire kids and the members of our church to be people of real passion, where they don't just find something they love doing and do that over and over again, but they see a cause so worth not only living for, but dying for, that they will be involved and invested and be willing to suffer and even die. And I think as we become those kind of people as the church, I think the world has the greatest potential to be redeemed by Christ's love. And so that's the journey we hope to bring people on. Now it's our hope and prayer that when people think of the church, they think of people who suffer really well, who sacrifice their lives, who have a cruciform shape to their lives, very much like Jesus himself.
Mm. And that sounds pretty doggone contrary to what we hear the world saying right now about the church when the church is mentioned. So that is beautiful. Yeah, thank you for that. The fellowship with the world aspect. Can you issue some warnings or directives or guidelines regarding how we tend to misinterpret that or think that we are doing a good job of entering in other people's suffering when, in fact, it's being counterproductive? I'm thinking of some of the silly things that we say that we don't think are silly at the time because we're in that moment and it's just so doggone awkward. You know, what do I say? How do I – any thoughts on that?
I think we're most susceptible to say something that's trite or to use some kind of platitude with people when they're hurting. We're most susceptible to do that when we haven't fully engaged our own suffering. I think when we have dealt with some of the things that we have that we don't want or want that we don't have, it just kind of calms us down. We're more comfortable being with other people in their pain. So instead of trying to offer solutions to people's pain, to students' pain. I know when I was a youth pastor and someone, you know, a student would come to me with an issue, like I wanted to be that messianic person who could solve their problem and get praised by their parents and get some more cred, you know, as they tell the senior pastor. And I think we got to resist that temptation. Instead, really try to forge solidarity and empathy and be with people during these times. Make ourselves more available to walk with folks instead of feeling that pull and that draw to say something like that. So I think we're most susceptible to being hurting when we're trying to help when we haven't really processed our own suffering, gone to a counselor, met with a spiritual director, confessed our sins, and kind of lied to ourselves a little bit. So they say, ignorance is bliss except with self-awareness. So we need to have a greater awareness, I think, of our suffering to be able to bless other people well. But I think along with that too, I mean, just to maybe turn this a little bit more positively, I think as we have done that and we learn to walk with people well, and we talk in the book that pain sharing earns permission for faith sharing. I think one of the ways that we can help reach people, you know, for Christ is being those who are so good at sharing others' pain. And you know, some of our friends, we tell a story about how their neighbors, they became really good friends with them, and they had shared about some of their hardships, and these other people knew they went to church, but they didn't really try and hit them over the head with it at all. And then when this this young woman's mother got cancer and then it progressed rapidly and she died, our friends, they just walked with this couple so beautifully and just were with them, sat with them, tried to just do some fun things and never really offer explanation. And a few months of that, the girl out of nowhere said, "Can you tell me about your Christian faith? Because I know you guys have suffered and you have gone through this really well and help me." And they were able to really witness and talk about Jesus being asked to give an explanation for the hope that they have. So I think it's a really, really powerful opportunity. But yeah, in the book, we do talk about a few of the steps that are really helpful. And it starts with really entering into your own suffering, some of the other things to make sure that we don't do. I mean, we need to pay attention to others. We need to be vulnerable. I mean, we need to be responsive, and that means we can't just fill up our schedules to the max. We need to create some margin so that when people are going through hard times, we have some availability to be able to really care for them. And then we really need to befriend people. So often we see hurting people as like our project that we want to heal and fix. But people just really want a friend. They don't want someone who's going to fix them. So those are just a few of the things that are really, I think, important. Speak less instead of trying to solve people's problems, I think, is the bottom line.
Yeah, and there's a lot of this practical advice, these guidelines, these, you know, you might call them borders and boundaries directives in the book, and they're really, really good. So I have two final questions for you, and then I'm going to ask you to do a reading. Have you been asked to do that yet? Have you asked to do a reading? You know, like they get authors, yeah, so they do a reading, and there's something I read in here that you wrote that when we finish, get ready for that. I'm going to ask you to read it because I think it's incredibly powerful, and I want to hear you read it. But before that, I love asking this question. If you could rewind your life, you know, your marriage, your life, and in hindsight, as you're rewinding, you think about all the places where suffering has come in. Would you change anything? Wow. I mean, I just, you know, like, would you eliminate any of the suffering when you see what's come out of it in terms of who you are as a person and who you and Aaron are as a couple and who you are as a family, who you are as a pastor?
That's a great question. When I think about the failed adoptions, and I wish I could have eliminated the situations that caused those children to be in the place that they were in. I wish I could eliminate that. I wish I could have eliminated maybe, I guess from our standpoint, you know, even like I think of my wife's eye disease. One of the things that's really beautiful about our marriage is we do everything together because she doesn't drive. So we go to every appointment. We run every errand. Like there's not a time where, you know, we both get in our separate cars and go two different directions. So it's just forged such a closeness that we have that I wouldn't trade that. But, you know, it's hard for me to say, like, I wouldn't eliminate that for my wife. I would do anything for her to not have that disease. But, you know, I'm grateful that God still used that in some very redemptive purposes. So it's hard to answer that, Walt. It's a really pretty provocative question that I'll probably take some time to think about and pray through because it's really worth reflecting on. And that's probably worth reflecting on for anybody who's gone through some hard times. I'm glad you raised that question. But I am really grateful, like, and I think this book has some great potential. We hope and pray to minister to people. And we've heard some great stories of how it's really helped people in the midst of some hard times. And so when I hear those stories and get to interact with people who have been blessed by it, you know, this book wouldn't have come about without a couple failed adoptions. This book wouldn't have come about without my wife's eye disease, without all the accidents and diabetes and challenges that Paul went through. So we're grateful that God is using these tough things you know, for his greater purpose.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry if I put you on the spot with that one, but I always ask that because it's helpful to me, you know, as I think back about things that have happened in my life. In fact, you know, I think, you know, I don't know you well, Dave, but as a pastor, you know, and Paul's seen this, I'm sure. That's why they connect with him. But just how suffering has shaped you and made you so much more, you and Aaron both, you know, so much more effective in your ministry. On one of the youth ministry forums, I saw a question, hey, we're interviewing for a new, you know, senior pastor at our church. I get to sit in on the interview as a youth pastor. What are some of the questions, you know, that you think I should ask? And I blurted out, you know, without really thinking of it, but I blurted out an answer. I said, here's an important question. How have you suffered? Because I just think that shapes us so much. I mean, I would not be the person I am without that. There's a part of me that never wants to say that because now you're wondering, what does the next week hold? You know, what does the next month hold? And yeah. What about any recommended reading besides some of the books you mentioned? For those who are listening, just so you know, if you go to cpyu.org and you go to the part of the page, you know, our page there for the Youth Culture Matters podcast, and you scroll down, you find the player for this podcast, Chris Wagner here. Underneath that, we'll post everything that's mentioned here and more in terms of resources so that you have an easy way to click on those. And certainly any books you'd mention now, Dave, what would you recommend?
Yeah, if you had to start, I think one of the best books on suffering, it's from Tim Keller, Walking with God Through Pain and Suffering. It is just a profound book, looks into some of the philosophical views of suffering, addresses the problem of evil, and then does get very practical about ways to walk with God through our pain and suffering. I drew heavily upon that. I think in some ways our book is a little bit more accessible than his. It's dense. It's a little bit of a hard read, especially early on, but that's a really worthwhile book. And I love The Broken Way by Ann Voskamp. She just gets at suffering and the redemptive possibilities for it, and such a beautiful sort of, you know, I don't know if you've read her stuff, but she has just such a unique writing style and perspective. So I really love that book. The Cost of Discipleship, kind of a little old school, Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And then there's a chapter about the Ministry of Pain Sharing by Eugene Peterson in Five Smooth Stones for Pastoral Work that I think is a really great chapter on what ministry is all about. And then just lastly, I would say if you or somebody you know is really in the throes of challenging times, a book that someone bought for us after we came back from our second failed adoption, and we were so disoriented. It was a book of Grace Disguised by Jerry Sitzer. He tells a story about how in one car accident, he basically lost three generations, his mother, his wife, and I believe two of his children in a car accident where they were serving at an Indian reservation. And one of the members came back drunk who they were serving and nailed their car, and three generations gone in a second. And Sitzer, I just felt like he became a great friend for me for a good month or so while I was grieving our own losses. And he talks about how, you know, your suffering might be a very bad chapter in a really good book. Wow. And I think you really need to hear that.
Well, I want to think about that. That is a great way to say that. Well, Dave, we're going to end with this, and I'm going to have you read something right at the outset. It says here, to help set the tone and direction for our shared journey throughout this book, I, Dave, have crafted these raw, honest, hope-filled words to draw us closer together and closer to God as we begin. They're words and phrases and thoughts I've befriended throughout some of the darkest points of my journey. I hope and pray they will become welcomed companions for your journey through suffering as well. Would you mind reading? It's a couple. I just want to encourage folks to listen to this, because this comes right from Dave's heart.
The temptation is to believe that you are the only one. You are not. But your suffering is unique. No one has suffered identically to you. So only you really know. And thus, your path ahead is entirely uncharted, even if you're going through this with someone else. But we all have to cover our own uncharted territory. This is as inescapable as the seventh grade. Yet buried beneath is an almost ready, waiting to be unearthed grace that says you can be engrafted into this uniquely same struggle. You actually already are. You're only now coming to awareness. This is the fellowship with me and him and her and everyone who has ever paid enough attention to notice. For to be human, for now, is to suffer. I too, like you, have suffered greatly. The experience for me, at least, has been like a weight of clenching intensity followed closely behind by a full hollowness, like the sound your once-filled home makes when you've just moved all the furniture out. It's like that feeling when something is over, only now you can't get over it, no matter how hard you try. So let me come out to say what you expect to eventually hear. There's no way around this. Why are you reading this, you think? Fair point, but please go on. A wise poet has said, you cannot go around a desert. How I hate him for being right. But oh, how I wish there was a way I could show you, like a hidden trail only the locals know. Oh, how I wish I could tell you that all you have to do is this, or just try that long enough, and it will all go away and be all right now. I can't. But while I can't end this, I can say this isn't endless. It might be days, months, years, one can never know. But no matter how long, there is this to remember. This is not all there is. This ache, pain, gnawing, suffocating, prostrating, wallowing, dying is not all there is. mysteriously, suffering actually says that your life is not over. You are not finished. Why? Because you are worth all this trouble. If you weren't, you'd probably just be left alone to mindlessly coast along in life. And where would that really get you? But according to someone, somewhere, you are worth this all and all that will unfold. There is more, and that more may one day be you. Maybe that's what's going on, because redemption always walks in your shadows, cries in your tears, plants in your ashes, rises from your grave. We don't know when, we can't imagine how. None of us has a clue as to why. But you are listening to just one voice among a multitude who can offer assurance. You will make it through. For beyond your distance lies a fellowship, a communion who have died many little deaths and one death to end them all, yet live with stains and scars and the stories to prove it. Like pilgrims among ruins who unfathomably possess an otherwise impossible joy. I still can't wrap my mind around it, but I can't shake it either. So no, you are not alone, but are encircled by a fellowship of suffering rejoicers who have felt unmistakably like and unlike you do, and who have lived through enough together to agree. Where the sufferer is, there God is. Welcome to the fellowship of the suffering.
Love that. Where the sufferer is, there God is. Thanks for writing that, Dave. Thanks for writing this book. And please extend our gratitude to Paul as well. We're sorry he couldn't be with us, but we love it. The Fellowship of the Suffering, How Hardship Shapes Us for Ministry and Mission. We've been chatting with Dave Ripper, and we want to encourage you to follow up and get this book. Any final words, Dave, before we let you go?
Well, thanks for having me on here, and I appreciate just the fellowship we could experience knowing that, you know, you have suffered as well, Walt, and I know that is what helps make your ministry as powerful and as transforming as it has been to so many youth workers, so many students, so many parents. So it was just an honor to be here, and thank you so much for the work that you are doing, and may God continue to bless the work of your hands and the work of this podcast.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate that. And Dave, we're going to have you back on. This was fun. Even though it was a tough topic, you know, it's necessary. So grateful for you. Well, thanks everybody for joining us, and we'll talk to you again on the next episode of Youth Culture Matters.
Thanks for joining us for Youth Culture Matters, a podcast from the Center for Parent-Youth Understanding. If you'd like to learn more about today's youth culture, visit our website at cpyu.org. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, email us at podcast@cpyu.org.